Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Salt intake is the most preventable reason for high blood pressure. Our society has been built to believe that salt is the spice of life, but if you're like the majority of Americans who are consuming more than the recommended amount, you're at risk for high blood pressure and additionally other cardiovascular diseases. Flavor Dr. Chad Roden is a heart expert. Dr. Roden is the author of Bringing Down High Blood Pressure and is a leading authority on disease prevention, as well as has an exercise and nutrition expert who can provide tips to prevent high blood pressure and dispel common myths about heart disease. He can explain how to incorporate heart-healthy habits into one's lifestyle, how to eat for optimum blood pressure, and how to survive the dreaded salt withdrawal. Dr. Chad A. Roden, MD, PhD, is author of Bringing Down High Blood Pressure, which we'll be talking about today. Dr. Roden, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Lisa, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I really enjoyed your book. I have a master's in public health, and I am all about lifestyle changes, so I thought that was so positive. And in chapter one of your wonderful book, Bringing Down High Blood Pressure, you ask two very important questions. What is high blood pressure and why is it important? If you can tell us those.
Sure. I'd love to. And I started out the book with those questions because you hear the terms high blood pressure. You may hear it on TV. You may hear it from your physician. You may hear it from a family member. But as a person that's not in the medical community, putting a tangible definition to blood pressure is sometimes difficult. So basically I go into an explanation of how blood pressure develops, and it is basically a phenomenon that involves the vessels. Like, our bodies have somewhat of a pipe system, if you will, and
mm-hmm.
when those vessels don't relax as they should, they get clogged, and you can imagine that there is a pressure buildup,
mm-hmm.
somewhat like a kink in a garden hose or something like that. And so that's somewhat of a extreme analogy, but that's really what happens ultimately. And your body likes blood, and of course blood travels through these vessels, and when certain organs such as your heart, your brain, your liver, your kidneys, they don't get blood, then certainly there can be some severe consequences to that.
And that's why it's so important.
That's right. That's right. From a medical standpoint, that's absolutely why we focus on it as a primary risk factor for poor health, high blood pressure. Ultimately, you have heart attack, you have stroke, which occurs. You have kidney failure, also a leading cause of death that people may not be well aware of. You can have circulatory problems and not necessarily death from high blood pressure, but you can have just a poor quality of life a lot of times. And, our environment, and we may get to this as we discuss a little bit further, but our environment certainly plays a large role in problems with blood pressure. And one reason I like to focus on it is because we can really make a change
mm-hmm.
on blood pressure as physicians, as health care providers. And some things are more difficult to change, but we have a lot of evidence that blood pressure can be changed and it can reverse some of those negative effects.
Yeah, and what are some of the lifestyle and environmental factors that contribute to high blood pressure?
Sure. Number one, I think most people out there would probably be able to guess, is nutrition and
mm-hmm.
diet, the U.S. diet in general. Recent public health information has come out suggesting that if we would cut salt by 3 grams per day for the average American, then you know, we could save nearly 100,000 lives per year. And that's staggering, and even a more modest reduction would have significant health benefits. I've heard that, you know, if we cut sodium consumption by, say, 10%, then we would save, you know, billions and billions of dollars. I've heard the number somewhere around $30 billion in healthcare costs related. So what do those numbers mean? Well, 3 grams or 1 gram may not mean much to some people, but if you understand that the body only needs about 500 milligrams of sodium to perform daily function and maintain a healthy life, and the average American gets about, well, close to 5,000 milligrams, which is about 10 times the amount that we need, you can see that there is a lot of room to reduce that number. A fourth of a teaspoon is about the amount of salt that we need per day.
That's it?
Uh-huh.
And, that's 500 milligrams?
A fourth of a teaspoon, yes. Yes.
Wow.
500 milligrams.
Okay.
So 75% of the salt that we eat is not added by the consumer, but it's actually added into the food before we buy it.
Okay.
You know, the majority of the food that, or the salt, the sodium that we get in the salt that we eat is in prepared foods. Restaurants certainly are good examples of, you know, a place you might get a lot of sodium, and you may not even try to do it. You know, you don't put salt on it, so you think, well, you know, there shouldn't be a lot of salt. And, you know, we can taste salt, and most people do know that there is salt in salty foods because it has a good flavor, and people are used to that.
Oh, yeah. You have a really great turkey soup with barley. And what I love about your book is not only do you have tons of good recipes, but, I mean, you have information on exercise, nutrition. You have information on the role of medication in bringing down high blood pressure, which I want to get to, and your opinion on that. I mean, do you feel that some doctors, and I know it's hard to generalize, but tend to use medication maybe as a first, in the first line of defense versus trying to add exercise first? Or what have you seen in the field?
Well, I have to say I do agree with you on that. I don't know what the percentage is, and I certainly am not going to scrutinize other practitioners for the way they practice medicine. But I can say that the general teaching in our medical system, which I truly believe in, a lot of times minimizes the importance of therapeutic lifestyle changes, which is the big term for diet and exercise, more or less. And you know, the American Heart Association, for example, American College of Cardiology, these groups, they certainly stand firm behind that. American Academy of Family Practice, they stand firmly behind therapeutic lifestyle changes as being really in the protocol for management of high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does seem like, I'm hoping things are changing, but, and again, I don't want to generalize either, but it has seemed like doctors haven't focused enough. I mean, I even hear in medical school, they get like 4 hours in nutritional studies. I don't know if that's still true, but, I mean, you went ahead, you have a doctorate, right, in exercise and nutrition in addition to being an MD. I mean, you actually went out and... that's why you're such a great doctor. You know, you have this extra education that I think is so important, and it makes you so much more well-rounded, and I'm sure your patients really appreciate it.
Well, I took a special interest in that area of medicine, and there are some areas I certainly don't know much about at all, and I won't presume to know what some specialists know about some things. But with regard to nutrition and exercise and how it affects physiology, I feel confident in knowing about those areas, and I really, you know, have an interest in those areas because I see how applicable it is to our society. And, you know, everything can't be done in the doctor's office, as you know, Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
We certainly need regular follow-ups with our physicians, with, you know, healthcare providers, and we certainly need to, take medications at times. I certainly believe in that, believe in the healthcare system. But we don't spend, and hopefully we don't spend the majority of our time in a doctor's office or in a hospital and those kinds of things. Most of our life is outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, we, the greatest influence on our health comes outside of an office or a healthcare setting. So
yes,
lifestyle is something that we can choose to do as individuals, as communities, as a nation. Our families can, you know, have influences on each other and our friends and so forth and so on. And so hopefully, ultimately, some of these changes we can make can have a major impact on the health of society. You know, as I mentioned, you know, we hear things quite often these days about a need to decrease salt in the American diet as compared to other countries that don't have the problems. And, you know, some countries even have had, you know, mandates that there has to be less salt. And certainly that's been thrown out, for the FDA to mandate, you know, certain levels of sodium. And that's not, you know, we haven't come to that yet. It is very important, and it's important enough for those kinds of things to be talked about. But, you know, if people just take an interest in their own health, then, you know, we won't need to have mandates and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's true. And I think if people, and this is something I talk a lot about on the show, I've done many shows on just, you know, eating a whole food diet. Again, it just makes, you know, it's those packaged foods where all that salt is lurking. I mean, it's shocking if, you know, when I'm thinking about 500 milligrams a day, and if I'm sure if I went to, you know, a store right now and looked at the shelves, I would be falling over from how much salt is in each serving. And then a lot of times people, you know, the other thing too is with serving sizes, you might think, well, I'm just going to eat this can and it's actually, you know, it should feed 2.5 people. And that's a whole other topic, but then you're getting so much more salt than you even thought if you're thinking that's just for one. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, you have to understand all that too.
that's a great example. You know, a can of soup, just a typical can of soup that you might get at the grocery store, doesn't matter what brand, it may have 800, 900 milligrams of sodium per serving, and that can may have 3 servings in it. And so you can already, you multiply, you know, 800 times, you know, you're getting around 2,500 milligrams of sodium, which is 5 times as much as we need. It's even above the guidelines. The guidelines for sodium are set currently at 2,300, no more than that per day. Somebody with high blood pressure needs to get no more than 1,500, which is that's already above what we need. And, you know, that's just one can of soup. So that's certainly an important point you make, that we should read the labels and understand how much sodium's in there. A lot of people do look at the labels and, you know, look at the calories and fat, but they don't look at the sodium. And it's kind of gone under the radar, I think, recently, although we've known about sodium and its influence on health and blood pressure, and we focus more on some other things which are also important. But I think there's an increased awareness recently on salt and trying to modify the amount of salt that we take in.
Yeah,
sodium,
you don't speak. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you know, speaking of awareness, and like I said, I love your book. Another thing I love is, you know, my show is a lot about alternative approaches to a lot of different, you know, typical regimens. And I love that you have Chapter 7 is all about alternative approaches to medication. And you have Hawthorne, Qigong exercises and yoga and, you know, green tea and dark chocolate. And, of course, I did a whole show on the health benefits of chocolate with Monica Beard, and she wrote this great book with Shara Aaron. They're both nutritionists, called Chocolate, A Healthy Passion.
Uh-huh.
And I eat dark chocolate every day. It's, you know, it's honestly, it's like the only sugar I eat. And that's pretty good because there's not a lot of sugar in dark chocolate. But you also talk about the omega-3 fish oils, and you talk about massage and amino acids. And then you have a whole other section on, you know, stress relievers and massage and sleep. And you know, breathing deeply and increasing your faith and decreasing your worries. And that's why I think your book is so, I'm very into holistic medicine, and it's nice because you are a, you know, a Western doctor. I mean, you were trained as a Western doctor, but yet you bring these other elements in. And I love seeing that, because I wish more doctors would do that, because you got to look at the whole person and the whole picture and what their activities are, and activities that they should be adding, and foods they should be adding, and foods they should be taking away, instead of just handing them a prescription and saying, you know, see you later.
That's exactly right. Sometimes there are different reasons for that, and you know, we won't go into that, and some have more interest in looking at other options. You know, that if prescriptions are you know, necessary, then certainly there's a place for prescriptions, but you know, first line treatment, really the standard, even in, you know, it's funny because Western medicine does teach that the standard is to make some changes in your lifestyle, but somehow it gets pushed out. And if you look in the journals, and you look in the education or the academic textbooks, it's in there. And I'm not sure, you know, some of it does have to do with volumes of patients.
I was about to say, it's a time crunch thing, right? They just don't have the time.
That does certainly come into play. And you know, maybe reimbursement for time spent. And you know, there are some problems with the way the healthcare system runs. I mean,
definitely,
we certainly have to have it. There's, you know, we have one of the best healthcare systems in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, I certainly am a strong supporter of our healthcare system, but I'm also a strong supporter of trying to correct anything that's not right in it. And it's a, you know, work in progress, just like anything. And that's
one of course. And I hope I wasn't trying to sound like I mean, I love doctors. I'm very honest about some of the negatives or the issues that I see that I think need to be addressed. And that's why, like I said, I appreciate the work that you do, because you're looking at it in such a great way with a larger perspective.
Well, I appreciate that. I have a passion for it. So
that's great. Well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Roden. This has been so interesting. And your book, again, is Bringing Down High Blood Pressure, Immediate and Long-Term Solutions, Fitness Plans and Stress Management Tips, Practical Advice on Nutrition, 70 Delicious and Healthy Recipes, Information on the Risks and Benefits of Medications. And how can people learn more about you?
Well, probably the easiest way would be to go to my website, which is bringdownbp.com.
Okay.
That's bringdownbp, like bloodpressure.com.
Okay.
Also, I have a website, flavordoctor.net, and you mentioned
Oh, good. That's something that, well, you know, I'll have to have you back on again, because, again, you know, I mean, I like Mrs. Dash, and I love garlic, so I love using, like, not garlic salt, obviously, but just, you know, ground up garlic or onions. I mean, there's a lot of things you can spice up your food with. Curry, you know, that tastes really good, so.
That's right, and I don't think we mentioned what Flavor Doctor actually is, so if you don't mind,
tell
go
it.
Ahead and
yes,
tell the
definitely.
Listeners a little bit about it. It's a salt-free seasoning that I initially formulated in my own kitchen.
Oh, that's great.
It took me a little while to come up with the right formula. Obviously, I do have the nutrition background, and spent some time doing that. Didn't put any sodium in it, and came up with what I feel is a pretty good tasting salt substitute. And I've received a good bit of good feedback, so I would love for more people to try it. We've got it in our region here in the Southeast, just fairly locally right now, and also have it available at on the website, flavordoctor.net.
Great. Well, I'll have to get some. That's great.
Well, it's something you can put on all different foods, and it's primarily to be used after the food's cooked. You know, just add a little flavor, and you can just kind of pour it on. You know, it does have some potassium in it. There are a few, you know, groups of people that need to watch excess potassium, such as kidney patients and mm-hmm. and there are a few other groups, but for the most part, you can just pour it on, and so it adds flavor, and it's not too hot. I had to take a little of the hot out because it originally was a little too hot.
I like it hot, but I know.
But I can say, though, that it is manufactured professionally now, and it doesn't come straight from my kitchen for anybody just wondering. But
okay.
Anyway.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to trying that. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I want to thank Dr. Roden again, and I hope everyone has a great week.